This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, March 23rd, 2018. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, unionists at the World Water Forum in Brazil demand water rights. Women tea plantation workers in India rally for water access. The Labour Start report about union events around the world and singing, "I'm Sticking to the Union." This is Radio Labour. Thursday, March 22nd was World Water Day, a day set aside by the United Nations to remind people of the importance of safe, affordable water supply. The issue has made headlines recently because Cape Town in South Africa has announced that its access to potable water may run out next year. As well, the World Water Forum was being held in Brazil this week. One of the global unions which has been trying to highlight the problem is Public Services International. The PSI represents some 20 million public sector workers in 150 countries. I talked to David Boies about water supply. Mr. Boies is the PSI's Deputy General Secretary. I asked him if access to safe, affordable water was getting better or worse.
Well, it's impossible to say that it's more or less. It depends on country. It depends on even city. You see that Cape Town in South Africa is about to declare zero day when their reservoirs all run dry. So I would say for Cape Town, it's become more difficult. Is that an impact of climate change? Is it an impact of mismanagement? Is it an impact of lack of investment? But for Cape Towners, absolutely more difficult. In some countries, in some cities, it's becoming better because there is investment, there is proper management, there's a lot of work being done to ensure that the poor get access to water.
Safe and affordable drinking water has been declared one of the UN's sustainable development goals. What are some of the challenges faced in achieving this goal?
Let me just say, Mark, that the attainment of that goal is a big victory for a lot of social movements. It's built on the victory in 2010 of having the UN General Assembly declare access to water and sanitation as human rights. The challenges, of course, of universal access is you have to invest a lot of money to bring safe and affordable water to people's houses. And there's well over a billion people on this planet who don't have safe and affordable water in their house. In fact, there's probably even many more when you look at how many cities where the water is used for washing and showering, but not for drinking. It's not potable. So one of the main challenges, as always, is who's going to pay for it? And especially because those who don't have access are mainly those who also don't have a lot of money. So the UN is regrettably falling under the false promises of PPPs, the public-private partnerships, which if anybody's following what's going on in the UK these days with all the bankruptcies and the revelations of how much, for example, the water companies are overcharging and overpaying their CEOs and overpaying their shareholders. So the biggest question for us on the one hand is, where's the money come from? And the second one relates to who's going to manage for what purpose, because there is a big difference between managing for profit and managing for people and planet.
Do you have any examples of municipalities which have taken back their water supply from private contractors?
Well, as the world knows, the biggest remunicipalization, we call it, is Paris. And this is the heart of the two monster private water companies. Why they did it? Because it was a commitment made by the mayor to deliver better services to the citizens. Now, there's been hundreds of cities taking back their water, whether it's Berlin, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's Hamilton, it actually is a growing wave. I'm not going to say it's tsunami right yet. Now, why do they do it? And it's actually mayors and city councils of the left, of the middle, and of the right. And of the right, it's the arguments for them is, well, it's cheaper. You don't have to pay profits. You don't have to pay shareholders. You reinvest the money in your own system and not export your money to who knows where, for what purposes.
As meetings about access to safe, affordable water were being held in Brazil this week, women tea plantation workers in India were fighting for their right to water access. C. Marie Ainsborough reports.
On World Water Day, March 22nd, women in two Indian states demonstrated against their lack of access to water and sanitation. The women pluck leaves on plantations in the states of Assam and West Bengal. There are few taps where the women can get water for their families before they leave for work, so they line up for hours before work to fill their water containers. If the lineups at the taps are long, the women are often late for work. The result is that they are denied work for the day, resulting in even more financial hardship for them and their families. To make matters worse, the open water taps and drainage systems, both at work and in the housing areas, are breeding grounds for mosquitoes. The mosquitoes cause dengue and malaria. Sanitation systems on the plantations are also limited and in deplorable condition. Trying to help the women workers is the global union IUF. It has helped the women form committees to document the problems and negotiate for their right to access safe water. The plantation managers are refusing to negotiate. The IUF is calling on global tea brands such as Tetley to force its suppliers to recognize the committees and agree to safe, easily accessible water supply. The IUF is the global union which represents 10 million workers who are employed in sectors such as agriculture, food, hotels, and restaurants. I'm C. Marie Ainsborough.
Governments and multinational corporations have been secretly negotiating a huge trade deal called the Trades and Services Agreement, TISA. 22 governments, plus the European Union, are part of the negotiations. They include Australia, Canada, and the United States. If implemented, TISA would cover 70% of the world's trade in services. And services these days include much more than they used to. To help unions and their members understand the potential effects of the deal, the Global Union IUF commissioned a comprehensive analysis of TISA. IUF represents some 10 million workers around the world who are employed in food industries, agriculture, hotels, and other sectors. I talked to Jane Kelsey, the author of the report. Dr. Kelsey is a professor of law at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. I asked her to explain the basics of TISA and who is promoting the agreement?
Well, as workers and unions know, over the last 30 to 40 years, we've had an onslaught of what some of us call neoliberalism or market and corporate driven rules that work for them, the 1% and not for the 99%. That model is now in trouble, and so the corporations and countries that have been sponsoring it want to lock in that model, and one of the ways of doing so is negotiating international agreements that are binding and enforceable outside the country and that prevent future governments, future union activism, future activism of any sort, changing that direction and that paradigm. And that's basically what the Trade and Services Agreement seeks to do, alongside various of the other negotiations that people may have heard of, such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement or the TTIP Agreement and so on. So who is driving this? There is a group of corporates who call themselves Team TISA. They're some of the biggest lobby groups led out from the US, but the majority of them are actually not just the big banks and the big telecom companies and the big logistics companies, but they're also now the big digital operators. And they're wanting rules which their friendly governments, who call themselves the really good friends of services, they want rules that will basically prevent the future regulation of their operations, whether by foreign investment in countries or by digital means and so on from offshore.
Here with his report about union events around the world is Labour Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
Here's a small sample of the average of 290 news stories added to our site each day last week. Our top stories section included links to coverage of the first strike in the tiny European country of Andorra since 1933, the showdown over labor standards rollbacks in France, and a strike by Indian Uber drivers. We had news of strikes and lockouts in dozens of countries. Here are just a few highlights. Spanish warehouse workers shut down Amazon's operations for 2 days this week as part of their push for improving their working conditions. Australian dockers staged a 48-hour warning strike after their employer withdrew from a collective agreement. The employer immediately began flying scabs to work using a helicopter. Union members returned to work this week in Chad after a 7-week-long public sector strike that started when the workers' wages were unilaterally cut. University workers in Zambia were refusing to work until the head of their institution was replaced, while teachers in the same country walked off the job to demand a living wage. Workers at a South African factory producing solar panels downed tools in an effort to gain a wage increase. Apprentices on the Indian rail system caused chaos in Mumbai when they walked out to back their union's demand for job security. The Prime Minister of Dominica personally attacked striking dockers over their wage demands. Online game developers based in France started the second month of their strike in a fight to gain a wage increase. And after a one-day strike earlier this month, Mexican teachers were facing reprisals. Another strike is planned in protest. Our top working women's stories included coverage of a study of workplaces in Pakistan that revealed most not only lack basic facilities for women, but fail to comply with labor laws, which are intended to make them women-friendly, and working conditions in a Samsung phone factory in Vietnam, employing mostly women. The Health and Safety Newswire, we run in cooperation with Hazards Magazine, carried stories to hundreds of union websites around the world about the release of a report that found evidence of at least 2,006 workplace deaths in Turkey last year and an Irish court action over workplace bullying. Currently, LaborStart is running 4 online actions. Take just a few minutes out of your day and join thousands of trade unionists around the world in helping workers make their lives better, or even help save those lives. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here's Billy Bragg and friends singing, "I'm Sticking to the Union."
Once was a union maid who never was afraid, but the goons and the geeks and the company finks and the deputy sheriffs who made the raid. And when the news was called, she went to the union hall, and when the legion boys came round, she always stood her ground.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking to the union, till the day I die.
Yeah. This union maid was wise to the tricks of company spies. She couldn't be fooled by the company stool. She'd always organize the guys, she'd always get her way. When she strived for better pay, she'd show her card to the National Guard, and this is what she'd say.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking with the union, I'm sticking with the union, I'm sticking with the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking with the union, I'm sticking to the union, till the day I die.
You women who want to be free, just take a tip from me. Join your hand with a union man into the 21st century.
Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking with the union, I'm sticking with the union, I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union, I'm sticking with the union.
And that's it. International labor news and music you can use. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.